Welcome to The Spot, KALW's weekly space for the best in public radio podcasts and storytelling. I'm your host, Ashley Ann Krigbaum. For many, space travel is the stuff of childhood dreams, a fantasy that might lead to a week at space camp or collecting an extensive amount of space adventure novels. But now, with the possibilities of a space tourism industry on the horizon, the dream to soar high above the stratosphere is closer to reality than ever before. Our first story comes from the Salt Institute of Documentary Studies, who introduces us to a retired pharmacist getting ready to hopefully take a trip to space and then back down again.
I've seen all the pictures I need to see of what it looks like from space, but I haven't seen it with my own eyes. I expect that I will be inspired beyond my capability to understand. I've heard people kind of describe it that way, real astronauts. And they all go sit with their noses up against the windows. Now, if it's that exciting to them and they've done this, you know, they're on their fourth flight or something, what's it going to be like for an ordinary person like Steve LaVertia? Less than 500 people on planet Earth have ever left planet Earth. My name is Steve LaVertia. I'm a Maine native, and my space nickname is Captain Galactic. In my case, it's been a childhood dream to fly into space. I'm a child of the space race. Kennedy, I remember him giving the speech, and he said, you know, we will do the things that are hard, not the things that are easy.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
We'd already been beaten into space by the Russians, and he said, well, we got to have a goal here. He said, I announced today that we're going to put a man on the moon and bring him back to Earth before the end of the decade. And I think in my lifetime, it was probably one of the most inspirational things that ever happened to me. I think right then and there, I was hooked.
Columbia, this is
I taped all the early flights with a recorder. A little thing, turned it on with the reels. I was sitting in my Cushman Road home with my parents, with my tape recorder, in July 1969. And in Walter Cronkite, I remember, he cried. Tears came to his eyes. When they landed, they said, the eagle has landed. We all cried like babies. You know, a man is on the moon.
Tranquility Base here. The eagle has landed.
I decided that I would try to become an astronaut, and I thought the best way to do it was to become a jet pilot. When I noticed that things started to get fuzzy, my eyesight was going. Wouldn't you know it, I needed glasses. Because the early astronauts, they all had to have 20/20 vision, and they had to be supermen, really. And so at the age of like 14, 15 years old, my first dream was struck down that I was not going to be able to be an astronaut.
Today, I think it's been brought back, like it's possible again, and not just for astronauts or cosmonauts, it's there for everybody, really. I'm Pamela Hurley Moser, and I'm the president and CEO at Hurley Travel Experts. I'm an accredited space agent.
I was probably one of the first 5, 6, 7 people in the world that signed a contract with Virgin Galactic, and I signed it in July of 2005. I'm likely to be in one of the top 10 flights. When are they going to start flying? If all the tests go according to plan, there's an outside shot they may start flying some of the founders late 2009, no worse than 2010. So that's right around the corner.
People are always asking me, well, who are these people that are, you know, wanting to spend $200,000 to take this flight?
I'm probably one of the most knowledgeable people you're going to meet on space flight.
Space junkies, you know, people who are real space fanatics.
I mean, I could spend hours, if not days, talking to you about the things I know.
I mean, they truly were the first audience that were really interested, because they've been waiting for years for this to happen.
I'm very anxious. I don't have to go tomorrow, but I'm not going to live forever. You never know what's going to happen tomorrow, the day after that.
It's all an experiment right now. So if people are willing to sign off and take the risk.
It's a pretty violent thing. I'll be riding on the front end of a rocket that's going to be accelerating, for, like I said, from a couple hundred miles an hour to almost 3,000 miles an hour in seconds. It's risky business. And this is a risk worth taking for what I'm going to get to see and what I'm going to get to do.
It's a normal runway takeoff.
The flight up will take about 2 hours under the carrier jet, what's called EVE, White Knight 2.
Below that, attached to the belly, is the spacecraft. It gets up to about 50,000 feet.
Then the call will come out that they're preparing to drop us.
White Knight releases Spaceship 2.
And you're going to see White Knight kind of drop away like this, and you're going to see her peel away like that. And then the call's going to come out. Firing sequence. Five, four, three, two, one. Ignition.
Spaceship 2 ignites its engines.
When they ignite the rocket, it goes to full throttle immediately.
Within a few seconds, you are supersonic.
Your eyeballs flatten out a little bit. Your vision changes a little bit.
Traveling at Mach 3.3, which is faster than a speeding bullet.
They teach you how to breathe because it's hard to breathe. You can pass out. You can lose vision. Instead of color vision, you can go to black and white. You will reach 70 miles within a couple minutes.
All of a sudden, the rocket engines go off.
Everything will go flat silent.
You are now in space.
The captain has now turned off the fastened seatbelt sign.
And we're going to have huge windows, and we're going to be able to float around, look out the windows.
You are now free to float around the cabin as you wish.
We'll be weightless for 4 or 5 minutes. Everybody that I've talked to, including real astronauts, and everything that I've read, say it's almost heart-stopping when you see how fragile this little planet is. Earth is one of those little rare blue planets. It's like a gem. From the time they ignite the rocket motor until the time you land on the ground, it'll be 29 minutes. Actually, in outer space, as I said, above the 62-mile point, it could be as little as just a couple minutes. There will be no letdown. I literally could get out of the history books as the first native Mainer to fly in space. I didn't even know that when I started this. But am I proud of that? You're damn right I am. I think I can be in a position where I can make a hobby of getting out into schools and other situations. If the teacher can say, this is Steve LeVertier, goes by the space name of Captain Galactic, who's been on a space flight. I'm not a basketball star, obviously, at 5'4", but if I could have some star power in a classroom, and for the sole purpose of maybe being a little bit of an inspiration, positive influence on these kids, then it'll all be worthwhile. It's important to me in my lifetime. I said, if I ever have the opportunity, I'm going for it.
That piece was produced by Josie Holtzman. If you'd like to hear more stories from producers at the Salt Institute of Documentary Studies, or find out about their audio documentary classes, visit www.salt.edu. You're listening to The Spot, KALW's weekly showcase of the best stories from podcasts and independent radio producers. I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum. For those of us who aren't entirely certain that we'd like to make our dreams of traveling in space come true, there are plenty of outlets we can tap into in order to play out our wildest fantasies. And when I was growing up, Choose Your Own Adventure books took me to the deepest reaches of the ocean, treasure-seeking in Mayan ruins, and face-to-face with an abominable snowman. In the most recent episode of the podcast, Rendered, the team went deep within the pages of the Choose Your Own Adventure franchise to look at the history and lasting effects that these books have had on our culture and also on us as individuals.
I'm Julie Sabatier, and this is Rendered.
Warning! Do not read this book straight through from beginning to end. These pages contain many different adventures that you may have. From time to time, as you read along, you will be asked to make a choice. Your choice may lead to success or disaster.
If, like me, you're a child of the 80s, that warning probably sounds familiar.
The stories had to have a sense of real danger, that, you know, these were risky choices you were making, because it was an adventure book.
That's Doug Wilhelm. He wrote 8 books in the original Choose Your Own Adventure series. And I realize that there may be people out there who don't actually know what I'm talking about. So let me break it down. If you want to skip this part, just fast forward about 15 seconds. You see what I did there? That is basically what Choose Your Own Adventure is all about. The books were written in the second person. So you, the reader, were the protagonist. And the book would start with, you are a mountain climber, or you are a deep sea explorer, or something like that. And a few pages into the story, you would be presented with a choice. Like, if you try to hitch a ride on a whale, turn to page 5. If you decide to try to escape, turn to page 14.
And the choice always had to be hard. It couldn't be a choice where it was obvious that one of them would be bad, because that was no fun.
It feels weird to explain, because it's a concept that's become so ubiquitous in our culture. But in the late 70s and early 80s, interactive media was still a very new concept. I mean, this was considered cutting-edge technology.
E-N-E-Y.
I remember Choose Your Own Adventure books as something fun that I would read when I was probably supposed to be reading something else. And I always ended up holding my fingers between the pages so that I could go back and retrace my steps if I made the wrong choice and ended up dead. There was a lot of death in Choose Your Own Adventure books.
It's now recording, and I'm ready for you to ask questions.
Edward Packard is the author of the very first Choose Your Own Adventure book. It started as a bedtime story that he made up for his 2 daughters.
I had a character named Pete, and Pete got shipwrecked on a beach.
The spark that started a whole new innovative style of storytelling started out more like writer's block.
I couldn't think of what should happen next, so I asked, what do you think Pete should do? What do you think would happen, might not happen next? And so they had different answers.
He was working as a lawyer, commuting by train from Connecticut to New York. He started working out the story, replacing Pete with you, and creating plot lines that branched off in different directions towards dozens of different endings, from rescue to certain death. He called it The Adventures of You on Sugarcane Island.
How many train rides do you estimate it took for you to write it?
Maybe 10 train rides.
It turns out, writing the book was the easy part. Publishers rejected Sugarcane Island over and over again.
I remember one reason that was given for rejection was that it was more of a game than a book, said the editor.
On a weekend ski trip to Vermont, Edward read an article in a local magazine about a small press that was looking for innovative children's books.
And I thought, well, my book is innovative, so that's why I got it out of the drawer and sent it to them.
Ray Montgomery at Vermont Crossroads Press knew a good thing when he saw it.
He was a combination of an entrepreneur, or almost a hustler, really. He knew how to find a project that could make some money, and he did well, and a very creative, intellectual person.
Ray Montgomery passed away in November of last year. He left behind a great legacy. After he put out The Adventures of You on Sugarcane Island, he took the idea for a series to a big-name publisher, Bantam Books, and Choose Your Own Adventure was born. The first official book in the series was Edward Packard's Cave of Time, followed by Journey Under the Sea. That one was written by Ray Montgomery.
That's where you go search for the lost city of Atlantis.
Right, and you have to decide if you want gills or not.
Yes.
Shannon Gilligan met and married Ray Montgomery in the early 80s, when the series was really gaining momentum.
What do you remember about kind of those early days of Choose Your Own Adventure?
Hard work. Very busy, you know. It's great to grab the tiger's tail, but when you do, you go where the tiger goes, you know. So it was busy years, lots of writing and editing, but lots of fun.
By 1983, Bantam had started releasing a new Choose Your Own Adventure book every month, and the pace continued like that for more than a decade. Ray and Edward wrote dozens of books for the series, but once it really took off, they couldn't keep up with the demand. Shannon wrote a few, and they hired other writers also.
My Choose Your Own Adventure books say by Doug Wilhelm. That's what they say.
And I didn't realize this, but apparently it was unusual for a young adult series to give credit to individual writers.
Like, I had a friend who wrote for the Babysitter's Club, and she never got her name on the books. She was thanked in the opening pages as if she'd been a help, and in fact, she had written the books. I hope I don't get sued for saying that.
Doug went on to write other books for young adults, and he says having his name on a best-selling series made a huge difference for his career. In the heyday of Choose Your Own Adventure, there were all kinds of spin-off series. Choose Your Own Star Wars Adventure, Choose Your Own First Adventure for younger readers, a horror series called Choose Your Own Nightmare, and of course other publishers had started to put out their own game books, as they were called. At the same time, role-playing games like Dungeons & Dragons were big with the nerds, and all kinds of kids were playing text-based interactive computer games like Zork and the Oregon Trail. God, I hated that game. I was always dying of dysentery and having my oxen stolen. Anyway, interactive entertainment was no longer new, and by 1998, interest in the Choose Your Own Adventure series had started to drop off. That's when Bantam, which had since been acquired by and merged with other publishing houses, put out the last book in the series, number 184, titled Mayday, by Edward Packard and his daughter Andrea. Somewhere in there, Ray Montgomery and Edward Packard had a falling out. When I asked her about it, Shannon downplayed it.
Oh, you know, they were never partners at all. I mean, it was just, Ed was a friend. And I think that what I liken it to is it's more like a band that breaks up, you know, like after a while, you know, it's just like you go in different directions.
Edward Packard gave the disagreement a bit more weight, but he clearly didn't want to talk about it.
I really would prefer not to discuss it.
Okay, well, you had some kind of disagreement, I guess.
We had a very sharp disagreement, yes.
Well, I guess I'm just trying to understand if it was a creative difference or if it was more of a personal matter.
I appreciate your questions because I admire good journalism and aggressive journalism and trying to root out interesting facts, but I really prefer not to discuss it.
Whatever the source of the tension was, the two of them chose different paths when it came to the afterlife of the series. Eventually, the rights for their books reverted back to each of them. And once Bantam allowed the trademark on Choose Your Own Adventure to lapse, Ray and Shannon registered it. They started a company called ChooseCo to put out new editions of Ray's titles and books by some of the other writers.
One of the reasons we were so interested in republishing is that we were privy to some data that nobody else really could get, and that was all the people coming up to us saying, I love those books. Where are they? You know, I want those books for my kids, or I want to give them to my niece and nephew, or things like that.
Edward adapted some of his titles for YouVentures, a series of apps and ebooks published by Simon & Schuster.
If I wanted to re-release any of my books or adaptations of them, I had to use a different trademark. And, of course, Choose Your Own Adventure is extremely well known, but YouVentures, who's ever heard of that? The irony is that I worked very hard revising and expanding and adapting the books, and I think they're the best quality I have achieved in my writing of these kinds of books, but they haven't really sold very well.
In preparation for this show, I checked out both the updated Choose Your Own Adventure books from ChooseCo and YouVentures. I had so much fun revisiting The Abominable Snowman and searching for the lost jewels of Nibooty, fingers firmly in place between the pages. Let's see, if you agree to take the journey, turn to page 51. If you decide that you are not prepared to change your life forever, turn to page 63. Oh, I'm going to take that journey. Let's see here. 51. Miraculously, the Yeti reaches out and grabs you, saving you just in time from certain death. He carries you back to your tent, puts you down gently, and slips off into the night. I did not die. That is excellent. I also stayed up way too late reading the YouVentures version of The Forbidden Castle. You don't know what happens next because you crack your skull on a rock as you hit the ground. Cool. All right, back to page 8 so I can just do that.
It was super fun and surprisingly easy to find my way back to make another choice once I hit a dead end. There's obviously a huge nostalgia factor here for ChooseCo and YouVentures. Oh, and this guy.
Hi there, it's me, Neil Patrick Harris, actor, singer, licensed taxidermist. I'm here to ask one simple question. Have you ever wanted to be me? Well, I am me, and let me tell you, it's not cheap. And now, I'm happy to announce that you too can be me when you read my book, Neil Patrick Harris, Choose Your Own Autobiography.
If you want to believe that I was able to convince Neil Patrick Harris's PR team that he should come on this show, just skip ahead about 10 seconds. I want you to know that I did put in a request and I called them back again and again. What you just heard is from the YouTube video that he made to promote his book. It came out last year and it clearly illustrates the lasting effects of the Choose Your Own Adventure series. Even people too famous to come on Rendered are not immune. All of this got me wondering, do kids still read these books? I asked Kathy Camper. She's a youth services outreach worker from Multnomah County Library here in Portland.
Yeah, they do. I mean, it's a little different than when they came out in the 70s, because obviously it's not new, but they're still finding them and we still have them in the catalog. Because they're interactive and like a game, a lot of times kids that are struggling readers will jump in and try it because they can set their own limits.
Kathy says that interactive books in general are still a big thing with kids, especially in that 10 to 14 age range, which is who the original Choose Your Own Adventure series was reaching.
The big one is Jason Shiga's book, Meanwhile, which came out in 2010. He kind of revitalized the series, but he did something different by making it a graphic novel.
Meanwhile follows the adventures of a boy named Jimmy, and the first choice is on page one. Should he get chocolate or vanilla ice cream? And true to form, many of the choices eventually lead to death and destruction. 10-year-old Solveig Van Oost is a fan.
Apparently, according to this book, if you choose chocolate ice cream, you could basically kill every single person in the world.
I was not surprised at all to learn that cartoonist Jason Shiga was really into Choose Your Own Adventure books when he was about her age.
The library near my house had one of those spinner racks that was just filled with Choose Your Own Adventure books. And I just read every single one of them. I remember as a kid, it was super important to me because as a kid, you don't get to make a lot of choices. Whereas I feel as an adult, you have too many choices to make.
He told me his favorite book in the series was one called Inside UFO 5440. That's one Edward Packard wrote in 1982.
It was a sci-fi type story. You're a kid looking for this planet called Ultima. And I remember it was very difficult to find, no matter what choices I made.
The trouble is that no matter what choices you make, you can't get there. There's no page direction leading to it.
And it was frustrating because I remember flipping through the book, you'd eventually come across one of these illustrations of Ultima. And eventually, I got so frustrated, I decided I'm going to cheat. I'm going to just flip through the book until I find one of these illustrations and then start reading there.
Doing that violates the directions given in the famous warning page.
Warning!
That began every Choose Your Own Adventure book.
And when I turned to that page, I remember the paragraph began,
"You did not make a choice or follow any directions, but now, somehow, you are descending from space, approaching a great glistening sphere. It is Ultima, the planet of paradise."
You had to think outside the box just to find the planet. And I remember as a kid, that just blew my mind.
There's a reference to Ultima in Jason's book, Meanwhile. And no, you can't get there by following the rules.
I wanted to reward the children who disobeyed the initial instructions.
Ray Montgomery and Edward Packard clearly agreed on at least one thing in recent years. They both blurbed Meanwhile. Ray called it a wallop of a good book, and Edward described it as ingenious. Like his heroes before him, Jason struggled to find a publisher.
So for about 10 years, I ended up self-publishing that book as a mini-comic.
He estimates he sold about 1,000 painstakingly handmade copies of Meanwhile before a publisher finally picked it up. Luckily, they let him keep in all that death and destruction.
You know, death is a part of life. You make the wrong decision and suddenly you're drowning or there's dinosaurs chasing you. You know, that's what I learned from all those Choose Your Own Adventure books.
I think it's safe to say that we all learned a lot from those books. That Yeti can be peaceful, that ancient mysteries can be solved, that super smart monkeys could totally destabilize the global economy, and, most importantly, that our choices matter. Looking back on your life now, are there points when you wish that you had chosen a different adventure, so to speak?
Yeah, absolutely. You could say that at certain points in my life, I turned to the wrong page. And I've been a very lucky person, so sometimes even when I turned to the wrong page, things worked out very well. If I should have been in a Choose Your Own Adventure book, I would definitely have been killed several times.
Thanks for tuning in to episode 2 of Rendered. Our production team includes engineer Brian Kramer, editor Laura Haddon, producer Jamie Cuddy, intern Sasha Peters, and me, Julie Sabatier. We get legal help from Cole Haver. The music in this episode comes from Seth Lorenzi at Two Track Minds and Levi Cecil. Our website is renderedradio.org. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram at Rendered Radio. And thank you so much to everyone who wrote us an iTunes review this month. Cornelius Swart, Mark Hitz, MD Haworth, Noah Irish, Sophie Kalikstra, Tate Sausgad, and Pickles Magoo. We really appreciate it. And thank you all so much for listening.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
You might recognize the voice of host Julie Sabatier. She produced and hosted the podcast Destination DIY, which has now been magically transformed into Rendered, a podcast all about stories on creativity and breaking rules for an audience of makers, doers, and curious minds. You can find more episodes from Rendered at MaximumFun.org/Rendered. Maximum Fun, the independent podcasting network, is in the midst of their annual pledge drive. There's still time to support Rendered and other shows on the network. Head to MaximumFun.org/donate to find out what perks are in store for you if you become a member. That's it for today's episode of The Spot. You can find this episode and more at kalw.org. Look on the homepage for the little blue letters that spell out The Spot. And tell me what you want to hear on The Spot. If you have some adventurous audio you'd like to suggest, please drop me a line at thespot@kalw.org. Tune in next Thursday, same time, for another episode of The Spot, only on KALW San Francisco.